Good afternoon, everyone. I say afternoon, it's still sunny, so it counts. Now, you'll notice from the slide that I've got up there at the moment that I'm not going to be covering all the verses that Ben just read out. I'm only covering the parable of the Good Samaritan. If you have any questions about the Martha and Mary story, then you can ask me later. Just letting you know. So, as Matt said when he got up earlier, we're continuing our look at Luke's most famous parables. And I reckon the Good Samaritan is probably one of the most famous. I mean, out of it we get the saying that someone is a Good Samaritan if they help out someone This has been recorded, so that's always a good sign. If they help someone out without looking to get anything out of it, then they're called a Good Samaritan. And that name also extends to a whole bunch of charities all over the world who have the name of Samaritan in them. But the question that this passage in Luke brings up for us is, what does following God look like? Or for us today, what does being a Christian look like? Well, you can look around the room and see a whole bunch of Christians to see what they physically look like. But what I want us to do is to dig a little deeper today about how to do Christian as well as be Christian, both of them together. Now, the story that Jesus tells is pretty clear. Ben just read it out for us. Some guy is going from Jerusalem down to Jericho, so two major cities. This is a popular route, but it's also dangerous because there's these robbers around. This guy gets robbed and beaten, and he's desperately in need of help. Luckily for him, two religious men from the Jewish temple in Jerusalem come his way, but they pass on the other side of the road. One of them's a priest, whose job it was to do the sacrifices for people in the temple, and the other was a Levite, so he's from the same priestly tribe of Levi, but not an actual priest. His job was to do admin and do music and cleaning and things like that. The third person to come along, the Samaritan, doesn't pass by. He helps out the guy in very many generous ways. But just as the story is clear, so is the point of the story. It's more than just doing good stuff for people is good. It's really got to do with the expert in the law's question right at the beginning. What must I do to inherit eternal life? When God brings in his eternal kingdom, I want to be a part of that, he's saying. So what do I need to do? At this point, we might be tempted to say, silly expert in the law. Doesn't he know that it's not about doing things? That it's just about having faith in Jesus? Is it though? Let's look at the priest and the Levite. They worked in the temple all the time. They heard scripture all the time. When Jesus gets into a discussion elsewhere about what's the most important commandment, he picks these verses from Deuteronomy and the verse from Leviticus about loving your neighbour as key. In fact, the words that we have from Deuteronomy, including the Shema, are arguably the most famous, well-loved and important words in the Jewish faith. The priest and the Levite knew the law, as this expert in the law knew it as well, and it was integral to their faith. But what good is just knowing? When it came to crunch time, it was what they did with what they knew that was important. It was what they did because love of God must express itself in love of neighbour. But it's so hard, isn't it? I mean, where do you even start? I think back on last year, it was famously terrible. There was so much need everywhere. I mean, for example, there was the civil war in Syria, and then there's ISIS destroying everything in also Syria and Iraq. You have Boko Haram in Nigeria, Al-Shabaab in Somalia, the Taliban in Afghanistan, And then there were all the terrorist attacks in Paris, in Istanbul multiple times, and Ouagadougou and Brussels and Berlin. And then there's all the wars that you don't hear about, like in Yemen, or Democratic Republic of Congo, and Pakistan, and Central African Republic, and Kazakhstan. And then there's all the problems that we have at home, like increased poverty, and climate change, and domestic violence, and racism. And if you're like me and you're on Facebook, you'll know that every time you start caring about something, you'll get other people coming back and saying, well, you've said something about the Paris terrorist attacks. I bet you won't say anything about the Istanbul terrorist attacks. You're just constantly demanded to care. And so you end up just having compassion fatigue, getting tired of having to care so much that you end up not caring at all, because it's just easier. Or maybe we know that we should care, but we end up making excuses. I mean, look at the priest and the Levite in Jesus' story. At worst, they simply don't care. But at best, maybe they did feel sorry for this guy. They saw him there all beaten up, but they thought, well, maybe he might be dead, and if they touched the dead body, they wouldn't be able to work in the temple for a week. But they didn't even check. They looked for an excuse not to help their neighbour, not to love their neighbour, and so not to love God as well. Or maybe we just think the world's problems are too big. So let's just focus on our family and friends. But look back at the Samaritan. He had no idea who this guy laying in the road was. He had all his clothes taken from him. He was badly beaten. He was essentially anonymous, just a human being in need of help. And the Samaritan was moved with compassion and helped him anyway. If we understand that we only have to help our family and our friends, do we then do evil to strangers? But God forbid such a belief. We are neighbours, all people, to all people, because we all have the same Father. As I said before, our love for God must result in love for all people. But we might complain, I can't solve the world's problems. What can I do? Well, for starters, you're not asked to solve the world's problems. Fixing problems isn't necessarily how we love. But also, this is a parable, so it's meant to teach us stuff. So let's look at the list of the things that the Samaritan actually did. So firstly, he gave up his stuff. So the bandages and the wine and the oil he used to bandage up the guy. Secondly, he gave up his comfort. So he was walking on the roads rather than riding. He also gave up his money, paying for the inn and promising to pay more if needed. And he also gave up his time, spending the night to make sure the guy was okay and promising to come back later. So what Jesus is saying here is that you can love your neighbour in so many ways, in all these ways, or a few of them, or even one of them, or maybe something that you can think of yourself. So how about some examples? Think about the stuff that you own. When was the last time you went through your clothes? I suggest you do it when you get home. And get rid of all the clothes that you haven't worn in a year, or that you don't fit into. Not those clothes where I hope I might fit into them later after I get rid of all the festive cheer. I have plenty of those. Stuff you don't fit into now. Anything that's good, pack it into a bag and chuck it in the clothing bin that's right there at church. Anglicare then on-sells that, rock bottom prices, and uses that money to help the community in heaps of ways. Or say you're going overseas. Why not, next time you're somewhere overseas, go and visit the local church, or go and visit a missionary who's working in that church. It might not be a four-star resort or whatever it is that you're used to, but it will be a massive encouragement for everyone. Maybe you want to give money. You want to help the homeless, but you don't know how. Well, how about give money to a charity that does know how, such as Mission Australia? Or maybe Vinnie's. There are plenty of charities out there who help the underprivileged and know how to get them housing and clothing and all sorts of things. Or maybe you could give your time. You can volunteer for one of these amazing organisations. Or you can help right here in church. For example, I know that Ministry of Game desperately needs cooks for Tuesday afternoons. So if you feel that you can cook for about 20, 25 people and you can do it on a Tuesday afternoon, please come and let me know, or Ben or Emily or Mark, because we'd love to hear from you. Just another example of stuff that you can do. There are so many ways that we can love our neighbour, but we have to actually do it. We can't just feel bad or feel sorry or feel like we should be doing something. Because one thing that the Samaritan does is he shames the priest and the Levite for their lack of action by doing the action they should have done. We want to be the Samaritan in that. Someone who loves God and then naturally goes on to love their neighbour, no matter who they might be, and no matter what the cost, because love is generous. But, of course, in all this I haven't answered an important question. What is a Samaritan anyway? I mean, apart from somebody from Samaria, which isn't very helpful. You see, Jesus uses the Samaritan for a very particular reason. If he was just talking about an enemy or a pagan person doing good, he would have probably picked a Roman or someone like that. But he doesn't. And to explain this, I'm going to take you on a journey through time and space, back 700 years before Jesus, so about 2,700 years from us. Now, this time, it's all happening in the Middle East. I checked, nothing else was going around the middle of this time. I checked Wikipedia. That's true, right? So the Assyrian Empire, which sort of is based where Iraq is today, was expanding its empire. And part of that expansion was into the northern kingdom of Israel. So what they would do was invade, they would deport all the people, or most of the people who lived there, and then import people from other areas of their empire. That way, no one could organise a rebellion, because there's so many cultures and languages mixed up in that. But, fun fact, the Assyrians also introduced Aramaic into that whole region. So if you see in the New Testament, Jesus speaking Aramaic, these guys' fault. But, because this is the Middle East, you can never go too long without some sort of fighting involved. So we'll fast forward 400 years through the Babylonians and then the Persians, and then we come to this guy, Alexander the Great, conquering the world from Greece to India, down to Egypt, everywhere in between. And so that, of course, includes Israel. When he died, his empire was split up and ruled by his Greek generals, but eventually the region of Israel destabilizes, the Jews rebel against the Greeks, and they put in their own king. And that's what Hanukkah's about. But what's this got to do with Samaritans? Well, Samaria, there it is, was in that region that had all its inhabitants, well, most of its inhabitants, deported by the Assyrians way back then. And so because of this, they had a historical split with the southern area, including Jerusalem, which you can see outlined by that box there. And so because of this split, they had a different tradition and different history about worshipping God. For example, they only stuck to the first five books of the Old Testament, that was and is still, their scriptures. Also, they didn't worship at Jerusalem. They worshipped on Mount Gerizim, which, it might surprise you to find out, was the location of one of three temples to Yahweh under the Greeks. So there was one in Jerusalem, that one on Mount Gerizim, and another one in Egypt, which, ask me about later. Mount Gerizim had always been a holy place. This was where the blessings were first pronounced to Israel when they first entered the Promised Land under Joshua. And so, like Jerusalem, most of the Samaritans lived here, in and around, because their temple was the heart of their beliefs and their culture. But that was until the Jews, with their new king that I mentioned earlier, conquered Samaria, burnt the temple to the ground. They then enslaved the Samaritans and forced them to take on Jewish customs. Now, the Jews thought this was a great move because it had expanded their territory. And they also saw the Samaritans as a hybrid culture with dangerously wrong ideas about God. But imagine how absolutely devastating it would have been for the Samaritans. In fact, not long before Jesus was born, they decided to get their own back and threw human bones into the Jerusalem temple to desecrate it. So this antagonism between the two wasn't anything new. And I mean, there were still people alive in Jesus' day whose grandparents would have fought in that war against the Samaritans. So there was a lot of tension, as you can understand, between the Jews and the Samaritans. Even though from an outside perspective, they would have looked quite similar, living next to each other, worshipping the same God, using the same languages. But all these years of history and culture and different beliefs put a real wedge between them. That's some Samaritans today and the excavated temple. So when Jesus describes this Samaritan coming down the road, what do you reckon his Jewish listeners would think he'd do when he says, "Then the Samaritan came on the scene"? Certainly he wouldn't do anything good, the Jews would be thinking. Samaritans wouldn't know how to do anything good. They had the wrong set of scriptures. They had a temple in the wrong place. Now they didn't have one at all, so who knows what sort of things they were being taught. For the Jews, a neighbour would have to be a fellow Jew. That's just how it was. Only Jews had the law right, so only Jews could do the law right. And yet it's the Samaritan, not the priest, not the Levite, who loves in the way that God has told him to. He had heard, "Love the Lord your God and love your neighbour as yourself," from Deuteronomy and Leviticus. And he was doing them. And I reckon the expert of the law gets this. Because when Jesus asked who was his neighbour, he answers, "The one who showed him mercy." He doesn't say the Samaritan, because Jewishness or Samaritanness isn't the issue. The one who showed him mercy. The one who listened to God and did what he said. The one who loved God, and out of that love for God, loved his neighbour. That's the issue. Just skip over that. Now, a few years ago, I went with a group of fellow students from Morling College on a trip around Israel and Jordan. And that included going around to places mentioned in the Bible. Most of them have a church on them, which is pretty cool. And they can be really amazing. So this is a couple of pictures I took in the Church of the Nativity in Bethlehem. It's amazing. Everything's covered in gold, pictures of saints and stories from the Bible, lights absolutely everywhere. The Church of the Holy Sepulchre in Jerusalem was even more shiny. I didn't get any good pictures, so sorry about that. But I remember that when we got back on the bus, we had this discussion about how could anybody worship in a place like that? How wrong that sort of showy worship was. We were there thinking that we were so enlightened, so progressive, when in fact all we were doing was being judgmental, thinking about how nothing good could come out of a different style of worship. See, I think we can often have a first instinct that criticises others, that seeks to put down instead of encourage. As I said before, we can look around this room and see other people who are Christians, but we can end up thinking that Christians must be people who look like us. We can forget that just because someone isn't part of our church tradition doesn't mean they can't do anything good. I mean, think about Mother Teresa helping the lepers out in India. She was obviously from the Catholic Church. Or Hillsong's City Care Welfare Network. Or the Coptic Hope charity that helps isolated Christians in Egypt. See, instead of being hostile and critical, we should find encouragement in their example. Our aim has to be to love God and then practically, actually love our neighbour. See, that's what following God looks like. That's what being a Christian looks like. So instead of being critical, we should be looking at how others can love their neighbour and be encouraged and inspired to go and, as Jesus says, there it is, go and do likewise.